What's up, sports fans? SMQBs, episode 8. This was a fun episode. We have our March Madness preview. We're going to walk through the different regions, hear the guys' predictions for the Sweet 16, and of course, the Final Four and their championship predictions. We have Punchable Face of the Week. Definitely some people who deserve to be punched in the face. And we're going to let the fans vote on it at Twitter this week and see who should be the punchable face. Also, some really nice Ted Lasso moments, just showing how great sports can be. We're talking Patrick Ewing and the Hoyas and Drew Brees. It's a fun episode. Let's get to it. Enjoy. Thanks for listening.
Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys. They're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Meichler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from D.C.
SMQBs, episode 8. The only thing crazier than playing the entire March Madness tournament in Indiana was us trying to figure out who was covering which region last night. So let's jump into it. Rooster, you're going to take us through this.
March Madness, baby, is finally back. We've been waiting a long time, and we have a great, exciting tournament coming up. There's no Duke. There's no Kentucky. We got first-time appearances from Grand Canyon and the Hartford Hawks and an awesome play-in game between UCLA and Michigan State. So let's roll right into a review of each region. I'm going to start us out on what I think is the toughest region, the West, which is surprising since the number one team is in the West. You'd think they'd catch a break, but no. Gonzaga, the Gonzaga's Final Four appearances have been marked few and few far between. Can they get through? Do you think Gonzaga gets through this tough region?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I'll get to that in a quick minute here.
By the way, did you guys get that? Mark Few and Far?
I love that. Yeah, that
I got it. That come on, huge. Let's have a little love. Let's have a
you
little
also
love.
Do you also do weddings and funerals?
Yeah.
My God.
I'm running quick.
You literally started with the West because you've been thinking about that line for 48 years.
That goes out to our buddy Tim O'Keefe. Go ahead.
So, you know, the West is interesting, except for the fact that I think Gonzaga basically steamrolled every team in here that would should pose a threat to them. I mean, I think they basically hammered Virginia. I think they hammered Iowa. And who else? There's someone else in here.
Missouri, Oklahoma.
I mean, I think they basically hammered everybody who should stand in their way. You know, the thing that's interesting about this bracket is you have two teams that had COVID problems, Virginia and Kansas. Okay. And this is, you know, I mean, we don't need our podcast to tell everybody that this COVID situation is really just the thing that nobody, the big unknown in this whole tournament. I mean, assuming you get through the tournament, but how these teams will come back from not having practiced, from having to deal with the distraction of this. I mean, those are two schools that, what's their practice schedule look like? When do they get to the tournament? I mean, isn't Virginia getting there like the day of their game or something at this point?
They have to be tested during the tournament. That's how close a call it is.
Yeah. So those are big things to watch here. Just giving you real quickly sort of the breakdown I see in this region. The best game, the Bobcats did it to my Hoyas the last time they were in the tournament. I'm looking at Ohio and Virginia, and I think that with the COVID layoff for Virginia, I think Ohio beats Virginia in the first round, which would be a big upset. But I think that's going to be a great game regardless of who comes out of it. So keep an eye on that one. Also, a sleeper team to make the Sweet 16. I don't know how much of a sleeper they are because they've been sort of a trendy discussion all weekend. But I think I've got Oregon getting to the Sweet 16 in this region here. So, yeah, I got Oregon getting there. And then the regional final, I have Gonzaga playing USC in the regional final there, with Gonzaga coming through the West and making it to the Final Four out of that region.
USC doesn't get out of opening weekend.
Well, that's very possible. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. But if they do, I think it works out for them.
So you've got USC beating Kansas, right?
I do.
Can you explain how Oregon is beating Iowa? Where is that? What?
Does Iowa play any defense? Not much, I don't think.
They got the player of the year, though.
They do. I happen
to agree with them. One of my finals teams.
I happen to agree with them. I think Oregon's beating Iowa, too.
Mm.
I think momentum's a big thing coming the NCAAs, and I think Oregon has it and Iowa doesn't. This is my upset special.
The fact they lost to Oregon State in the
Pac-12. They couldn't even win their conference championship game.
This is my upset special region. Mark it down. UCSB and Wichita State both make it to the Sweet 16.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. Craig Kelly's Creighton.
Wow.
Yeah, Wichita State and UCSB.
Speaking of Creighton, how in the world does Creighton get a number 5 seed in this region after getting smoked by the Hoyas 73-48 a couple of days ago? And the Hoyas were the 8th seed in the East at the time.
Well, I might know a little something about
it. It's a body of work. They're not going to penalize them for one game, especially a championship game like that.
And I think this is an overreaction situation. I mean, you've heard a lot of people talking about Creighton losing this first round game because of the way the Hoyas handled them. Look, Georgetown was on a roll in that tournament. The defense they played was just as good as it's been in 40 years of college basketball. And some of the shots that were going in for Georgetown too in the first half, there was a wing and a prayer on some of those. So I don't think you can discount Creighton from really just kind of a perfect storm that happened Saturday night in the Garden.
Well, congratulations, my friend. That was a big win for the Hoyas.
It sure was.
How you slice it.
We'll talk more about that later.
I think the sleeper in the West is OU. They played a really tough Big 12 schedule. They swept Kansas. They have big time wins under their belt. They didn't have a very good Big 12 tournament, which is probably why they're an 8 seed. I can tell you that Mizzou is not coming in with much momentum. So I would not think that'd be a big game for OU to get past. And OU will give Gonzaga fits. Now I have Gonzaga going on, but OU Gonzaga will be one of the classic first weekend games to watch.
All right, one final question on the West. Who knows anything about Grand Canyon? I'm sure they have a deep bench.
It's a beautiful park.
You have a list of jokes for each region?
All right, we're going to move on to you, Mr. Pope, in the East, which I think is the next toughest region. What do you got?
So the East, otherwise known as the National Football NCAA Championship Bracket, with 36 national championships in football in the first 4 seeds. It's pretty amazing between Alabama, Texas, Michigan, and Florida State, 36 national championships.
It does look like a football pool.
Exactly. LSU's trailing there at number 8, and they have 4 national championships. But the way you have to start at this is obviously at the top. Michigan, their fate is going to entirely rest on whether Isaiah Livers is going to make it back or not by the second round. If he is out, he's a wing, 13 points a game, chemistry important for Michigan. I mean, they're on a serious roll. But once Livers went out, you know, they beat Maryland. But then after that, they couldn't get past Ohio State. So I don't know. Michigan is a good number 1 seed. No problem with that. But they have potential problem down the road if Livers isn't back.
You think they don't beat LSU without him?
Well, that's going to be tough. I mean, LSU took Alabama to the final tip in the SEC championship game, and they are definitely peaking at the right time. These 8-1 matchups, and we'll talk about it when we get to the next region, but the 8-1 matchups, they could really be interesting. And, yeah, I could see LSU beating Michigan.
No way.
And, you know, I think – a really interesting game, obviously, is going to be the Buffs and Georgetown. Colorado, you know, they won five in a row coming into the Pac-12 tournament, lost to Oregon State, the, you know, Cinderella of the Pac-12 championship, who knocked somebody off the bubble. But Georgetown, what a great story with Patrick Ewing, you know, declaring that the Garden was his house and just going in and performing and backing him up. But I just think, as much as we'd love to see Bison's team move on, I think that's going to be a tough one to pick.
Hey, you know, Pope, you gave a lot of love earlier to OU. What about Texas?
Shaka-laka.
I love Shaka-laka. Texas here. I love Texas here.
So I got them going to the final.
Me too. Grade eight.
So look, Texas, also great Big 12 team. I think they have tough time with Alabama. You know, if LSU gets past Michigan, I mean, you could have a little redo of the 2018 national championship. But I actually see Alabama and Texas in the Elite Eight in this region. I do see Texas actually going on to the Final Four. We have a lot of friends, obviously, in Texas will be loved to hear that. But Shaka Smart, this is his year. They've got a really good team, and I think they can go all the way. So that's kind of a the play-in between UCLA and Michigan State. We can talk about that. But, you know, the pedigree championship between the two, Michigan State is on a serious roll. I think 11 seed actually might be a little high for them. I mean, they beat Michigan, they beat Ohio State, they beat Illinois.
They can beat Texas.
Those are two number one seeds.
Right.
They easily could advance to the Sweet 16 and possibly the Elite Eight.
What about an upset alert, Pope? You got any upsets? I think the mighty Iona Gale may take down your Alabama team.
Patino.
So doubt that's going to happen. But here's an interesting analysis for all you bracket heads out there. I did a deep dive into the upsets of the 12, 5, and 11, 6 seeds, because those are typically where you see your big upsets in the early part of the tournament. Did you guys know that 36% of the time a 12 seed beats a 5 seed, and 37% of the time a 11 seed beats a 6 seed? So I'm not saying Georgetown over Colorado, but I am saying, and I think I already alluded to this, I do see Michigan State getting past BYU, and I don't even really think that's a huge upset, but if you look at the seeding, that would be the biggest upset in the bracket going forward.
All right.
Except that you're wrong about Georgetown and Colorado.
And you totally missed the boat on UConn. But anyway, trivia question, since we were talking upsets. How many times has a number 16 beaten a number one seed?
Once.
Right.
Against your UVA.
Retrievers. Yeah,
next UMBC.
UVA came back and won it all, baby.
By the way, it wasn't even close. They blew them out.
It was a blowout.
No, they blew them out.
It was a blowout. All right. We're going to move on to the South and House. This looks to me like the easiest region. What do you think, House?
You know, I don't know about easy, but I do think it's going to hold form really amongst the seeds in the South. People don't know a lot about Baylor because it's not the kind of team that gets a lot of airtime and attention in the national media. But this team can flat out play. And if guard play is what wins you a national championship, they have got guard play through and through. But did you know the South has the nation's top-ranked three-point shooting team in Baylor, the nation's top-ranked rebounding team in UNC, the nation's leading scorer in Max Abmas of the Oral Roberts 15 seed. They've got a 2019 finalist the last time really they played with Texas Tech. I understand it's a different team. And they've got one of the best guards in the country in Moses Moody in Arkansas. So the South is stacked with talent. It's hard to see anyone in that region getting past the talent of Baylor. Jared Butler, Davion Mitchell, and Macy O'Teague are all 13 point per game and higher guards. Mitchell and Butler are 1-2 in the Big 12 in steals. But interestingly, though I don't think they'll pull off the upset, I think Oral Roberts is going to scare the hell out of Ohio State in that first game.
Wow.
Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts is 16-10 and have played Missouri, Wichita State, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma and score 82 points per game. That team can score. And I think they're going to score a lot of points in that game, and I think they're going to scare the hell out of Ohio State. Look, I know it's in vogue for everybody to pick Winthrop, and I know everybody's thinking I know everyone's thinking that Villanova is reeling without Colin Gillespie, with an injured Justin Moore. But here's the thing. Winthrop hasn't played anyone the entire season in the top 80. Top 80. And in the end of the day, I think coaching, talent, guard play wins out. Would it shock me if Winthrop wins? It wouldn't, but I think Nova holds on. But really, I think this is going to be holding serve. I think Baylor and Ohio State get to the Elite Eight, and Baylor makes it out of this bracket. If there were a sleeper, and I think Pope raised a really good point earlier about these 8-9 teams, you know, UNC is 12-5 in 2021. Since the calendar changed, they've been on a roll. They're first in the nation in rebounds. They clean up the glass offensively. But ultimately, I do think the South holds the form and Baylor makes it to the Final Four.
You see UNC taking care of Wisconsin without much trouble?
I do. UNC's played well.
You know, and if our viewers could see, I've got the 2017 national championship background along with my 2009 championship hat.
Are we talking about college football? How many?
You're an Alabama fan.
What I'm saying is Baylor. They're having some issues with COVID. They haven't been nearly as strong since COVID. Now, I mean, they could turn it around, no problem. They have all the talent. I've got them going, you know, all the way to the Final Four. But Carolina is on a roll. They don't, you know, Baylor's biggest guy is 6'8". They're going to wipe the glass with them. And if Carolina can hit some outside shots, it is going to be a big time problem for Baylor and Scott Drew. I think 8-1, like I said, alluding to that earlier, 8-1 is you're going to be your best second round games. And Wisconsin's lost 4 of 6. You know, they could easily beat Carolina because they're so inconsistent. But I do see Carolina getting on past that. And Baylor, big game. We'll see what happens.
House, you know, about your Wildcats, Villanova. You know, obviously big injuries, major disappointment to have to, you know, kind of go into the tournament with those losses like that. But don't sell that team short. I mean, you know, not to continue to be the Georgetown homer, because there's going to be plenty of that later in the episode. But you know, Georgetown played as good as any team in the country for 4 games, and Villanova only lost by 1. I mean, they were really the only team that put any sort of a scare in them. And but for, you know, a questionable call down the stretch there, they win that game. So
yeah, Georgetown shot 23 of 23 from the free throw line and got a nice call at the end of the game. Otherwise, yeah, Villanova wins that game. You're right.
So Nova did okay without, you know, without the two guys. And so but you know, another team that's going to be fun in that region, keep an eye on Colgate. I think Colgate's offense is like the most efficient offense in the country or something. I mean, that game with Arkansas, like first one to 106 wins or something, right? I mean, it's going to be a shootout, and that could be a fun game to watch.
Arkansas attempted 649 three-point shots this season.
They love throwing it up.
I mean, wow.
They're all beatable too. Yeah. The entire SEC is beatable.
Yeah.
We can't
get through the bracket, though, that region without talking about Milk's Florida Gators. What's going on there?
I have Tech. They're done in the first round.
well, Milk, it's a perfect time to move on to the Midwest. I've got Illinois winning the whole thing. Am I wrong?
No, I have them too. I mean, this is Illinois' bracket to lose. But this is setting up for what I think is going to be one of the most exciting games of the entire tournament. Illinois and my favorite. Look, I've been saying all year, the Big Ten or the Big 12 is going to win the national championship this year. And it is collision course between Illinois and Oklahoma State, which is going to set up a matchup with two arguably top 5 players in college basketball right now, in Dosunmu and Cade Cunningham for OSU. I love that game. I've got Illinois winning it. But now I will say this, Oklahoma State's going to be tested by Liberty in that first game of the year.
What?
The first game.
What?
Absolutely. They will be. Just I'm telling you right now, that will be one of those games where you look at the score in the second half and you're like, wow, is it that close? Liberty's not bad. Just keep an eye on it. But they're going to lose. It's going to go down to Illinois and Ohio State in the Sweet 16, and Illinois is going to win that. But in the bottom half of that bracket, I've got some serious upsets. I know everyone's talking
Aztecs, about, baby. Aztecs.
Upsets. I've got San Diego State making a huge run.
Yes.
I love
yes.
them.
Yes.
I do too.
Yes.
They've won 14 in a row. They got a good guard, Matt Mitchell. I have them actually beating, well, that will get
West Virginia. Second. You have them beating West Virginia?
I've got them beating Houston. West Virginia.
And Houston.
No. I've got Rutgers beating Houston.
What? Oh,
by the God. Way.
Wait, Houston, you have Rutgers beating
Clemson. What conference do they play in, House?
Tell us what you drank before you did your bracket.
You know, how did they even get in the tournament?
Milk, one of my questions was going to be, do you think Houston is a paper tiger? And obviously
Houston has played one top 25 team all year. They've had some horrific losses. I think East Carolina, Tulsa. I've got them. They're going to beat Cleveland State. I've got Rutgers, who has had have you seen their schedule? They played eight top 25 teams this season. Now they only won one of them.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, how do they do against good teams?
Do you know who that one was against? Illinois.
It wasn't Gonzaga. I know that.
It was Illinois. It was early, but they beat them. I have them beating Houston. Setting up an Aztec Rutgers Sweet 16. I've got Illinois, San Diego State in the Grade Eight, and Illinois winning that.
Milk,
don't sleep on San Diego State.
Man. Upset City.
Boy, there's no chalk in that region. Jeez.
Well,
San Diego State is hot.
Every year it happens, though, right? That's what makes this thing so exciting.
Well,
every
look at that. First of all, if you look at that bottom bracket, West Virginia, do you trust them?
No.
They're 4-7 against top 25 teams.
Yeah.
Houston. I mean, I know.
How can you not trust Huggy?
House, I know you like Houston. What conference is that, by the way? It's like the best one in the country.
Not at all. They play in the AAC.
I know.
And Wichita State's a real team.
That's not the American Airlines Center.
They haven't played anybody this year.
You know their coaches? The guy can flat out coach. Kelvin Sampson can flat out coach.
Former OU coach.
They really have good guard play. Their defense is suffocating. They can jack it up beyond three. I mean, do not sleep on that team. They can go far.
You know what? Yeah. Izzo can flat out coach. And when he was number two, number 15, Middle Tennessee State took him out. Coach K can flat out coach. And when he was number two, number 15, Lehigh took him out.
Oh, that was so sweet.
That's what's so great about this tournament. A lot of people argue this tournament shouldn't let in these unknown teams that have no chance of winning. That's the beauty of the tournament. They do have a chance of winning. I mean, I'll never forget University of Richmond beating Syracuse as a number 15.
Hey, Rooster.
That was fighters. Awesome.
Rooster, let me ask you this question. Do you think this tournament gets completed? I mean, do you think they're going to avoid all this mess that's been happening in the conference tournaments?
I think they were stupid to set it up so that the conference tournaments were the week before this. They should have given the players the 2-week off period that they would need to get quarantined. Having said that, I think once the thing gets started, you're not going to see a single star be announced as being COVID positive, just like in the Super Bowl.
Will there be a team that has to withdraw?
Maybe early. Yes. Like, it could be that UVA shows up and says, we just couldn't get all the testing done to prove that we're eligible.
Well, that means Louisville gets slotted at the 4 seed.
Yeah. I hate that. I mean, you could have a couple of teams that couldn't play their way in as a number 16 seed.
Yeah, that's going to
wind up as a 4 seed or a 2 seed or whatever. A
replacement team.
It's awful. Yeah. It's awful.
Well, everyone's doing the best they can with it. So let's
yeah, I know. All right, Bison, take over.
All right, no. So we got to do our final four picks, right? Everyone's got to give
their
final four. And I started off with the West. So I told you I've got Gonzaga in the final four. I've got Texas in the final four, Ohio State and Illinois. I've got Illinois taking on Gonzaga. And for the first time since 1976, we have an undefeated national champion, Gonzaga.
I'll pick it up. I've got very similar, Bison. I got the Zags, the Horns, Baylor Bears, and Illinois. And I got Zags over Baylor, chalk over chalk, and the Zags, Mark Few, cuts the nets down that he couldn't in 2017.
Pope, who do you have as the second Elite Eight team coming out of the South? Baylor and who else?
Out of the South, Ohio State.
Yeah, that's what I have too. Okay,
I like that.
I mean, I've got Illinois, and I've got West. I actually have West Virginia. They are a very tough team if you've watched Big 12 at all. And then I got Texas, Alabama, the rematch of the national championship in the Rose Bowl, and I got the Zags, and I actually have KU. KU was peaking when they got derailed at the tournament because of COVID, and if they can get it all together, that is a dangerous Bill Self team.
Patrick, what do you have for Final Four?
I've got Iowa coming out of the West. I've got Texas coming out of the East. You'll notice that I'm Big 10, Big 12 the whole way. Ohio State coming out of the South. And I'm Illinois out of the Midwest because I'm too scared to take Oklahoma State. But I want to. Cade Cunningham is ridiculous.
And then what do you got?
I think we're all... We're pretty consistent. I've got Gonzaga coming.
Hold on. We need Patrick's winner.
Oh.
Well, I took Illinois. Illinois is winning it all.
Yeah, he already said that. Sorry. All right. I've got Gonzaga coming out of the West. I've got Shaka Laka Smart's Texas team coming out of the East, just barely squeaking by UConn. In the South, I've got Baylor and OSU, and then – in the Midwest, I'm with Patrick. I've got Illinois and San Diego State, with Illinois advancing, Baylor advancing, Gonzaga and with Gonzaga playing Illinois in the finals and Illinois winning.
So my final four matches up with Pope and Roosters. I've got Gonzaga in the West, Texas in the East, Baylor in the South, and Illinois in the West. And like Rooster, I've got a Gonzaga-Illinois final. But like Bison, I've got an undefeated champion for the first time in almost 40 years. Gonzaga is going to finally get the monkey off their back, win it all over Illinois.
So we all have Texas in the final four.
Yeah,
the guy can coach, and they've got a really good team.
And by the way, I want to come back at you, Rooster, for a second, and your UConn Huskies, who shit the bed in the semis and could have set up just a classic Big East final. I wanted the Huskies there. The outcome would have been the same. It would have been just a complete beatdown. Maybe that's why they
didn't, been worse.
They rolled over and let Creighton beat them there, because they just didn't want the Hoyas to humiliate them. But, very, very disappointing that they didn't get there.
Me too. I agree. But I think they're a much better team than they showed that night. And I think they are going to give Texas a run for their money.
All right.
UConn's going to beat Alabama, by
everyone
the way.
Can dream.
Oh, I've
everyone
got them going dream. Past
I've
Alabama.
I've got UConn beating Bama.
Or actually, so UConn beating Iona.
Is this tournament going to be the road to the Hoosier Dome, since the road to Indy doesn't make sense since they're all going to Indy anyway?
Right. Yeah. That's right. All right. Anybody got anything else on the tourney?
Let's go. Let's get it going.
Let's go. Let's move.
Let's get it going. Let's
tip, all right.
tip it off.
Let's do it.
March Madness.
House. Let's punch someone in the face.
It's this week's punchable face.
Who are we punching this week? I think Rooster's got his guns up.
I think the theme of the week, boys and girls, is responsibility. Either you take responsibility for your actions or you exercise responsibility when you're taking actions that could affect thousands of people, and then maybe you can be considered a person of integrity. There are some examples this week of people who cannot be considered to have that integrity. And as Mama says, we need to knock them out. Number one, and at the end, I think we should have the listeners vote on our text site following this broadcast. Number one, no surprise, Myers Leonard. I have to say how sad I am for Jewish fans of the NBA, particularly the kids who were so fired up to watch the NBA All-Star game and three-point competition and skills competition, and God forbid that awful dunk show, only to have 2 days later to listen to the news that the backup center on the Heat is screaming effing K-word at someone on a Call of Duty game, and it goes live. So this is a guy who's a media-savvy guy, Myers Leonard. He's the guy who posted a very compelling media explanation as to why he stood while the rest of his team knelt during the anthem. And I actually thought that was well-received. It was a good explanation. I thought it was well-taken. He knows how to do that. He knows how to stand up and be sincere and say the right thing. Instead, what does he do? He gets his PR people on the job, and they're out there trying to make him look like he's so, you know, apologetic. He wasn't apologetic. He didn't take ultimate responsibility. He came up with some weak-ass excuse trying to say, I don't know what that word means. Bullshit. He's a grown man who graduated college, University of Illinois. And all you have to do is listen to the anger in his voice on that video. Listen to how he screamed F and K at this guy. He knows it's an anti-Semitic slur, okay? No one uses that word and doesn't know that. It's incredible to say, I don't know that that's not a slur. Maybe technically he doesn't know the derivation of the word. He knows it's an anti-Semitic slur, and it's a bad one. It's a word you just don't use. And he tries to get himself off the hook by pretending he didn't know it was a slur. That's just bullshit. And he's not too smart either, obviously. I mean, the owner of his team, Mickey Arison, is from Israel. He grew up in Tel Aviv. I think the commissioner let him off the hook with a one-week suspension while he's hurt, which just means he can't hang out at team activities for a week. He wasn't going to play anyway. And they fined him $50,000. Big deal. But Mickey Arison has suspended him indefinitely. And you know what? When you're scoring 3 points a game and you say something like that and your owner's Jewish, you know, bad things are going to happen to you, dumbass. So for using that awful anti-Semitic slur and not taking real responsibility for it, Mama says, knock you out, bitch. But there's
Bam.
More. But there's wow. more. And there's more. Hey, kid, here's another example of how not to take responsibility for using a hateful racial or ethnic slur. If your name is Matt Robinson, and you're the TV announcer for Oklahoma's girls basketball tournaments.
Oh God!
Yeah, and you're announcing the Norman High School versus Midwest City tournament game. You might want to know that your mic is hot, you dumb, stupid idiot. So the girls for Norman High School decide they're going to take a knee for the anthem, and this guy starts saying those effing N-words, and I hope they get their asses kicked, and F them, I hope they lose on open mic. So he continues to talk throughout the anthem, which we all know is a long song, and he's quite lucid throughout, knows exactly what he's saying, and seems to be ready to jump right into announcing the game when, you know, they finally cut him off because this is being broadcast live. He finds out like a day later, and his excuse isn't, "Oh my God, what I said was so horrible. I there's no words to express how terrible I feel." He says, "I was having a blood sugar spike, and it, which made me say those things. I'm really not racist. I would never say something like, you know, I'm going to give away my age again and get some grief from Nace." But I don't know if the listeners remember Flip Wilson and the Geraldine character, "The devil made me do it." This is "the devil made me do it" excuse. "The blood sugar made me do it. I'm not a racist." You know what? I didn't know that a blood sugar spike could make a non-racist suddenly have all these racist thoughts and blurt them out like that. Again, bullshit on you, Matt Rowan. We don't believe you. Mama says knock you out. And the final candidate
is another one
for your consideration and for our viewers voting. Is gonna surprise Pope, but it's Pope. It's your Texas Rangers president, Neil Liebman. Now, we've recently had the NBA All-Star Game affected by COVID-19, where two great players from the Sixers couldn't play. We've had the ACC basketball tournament decimated by COVID. Duke's out, UVA's out.
They had no chance anyway.
But the good news is
a reason to say I could have got the tournament, but for COVID.
That's true. But UVA was the number one seed. And they did win the tournament the last time it was played. The good news is the CDC and our administration is saying, you know, any adult who wants it is probably going to get vaccinated by May. So you would think that it would make logical sense to just be cautious for another few months, right? And then with a goal towards maybe June, we've got 100% fan participation, particularly at outdoor events. That seems logical, unless you're from Texas, I guess, because Liebman announced that the Rangers on opening day, on April 5th, their home opener, are going to allow 100% capacity at the stadium. And then he goes on to say, but thereafter, we're going to distance seating and following protocol. So what is he saying? We're going to have just one super spreader event April 5th?
Just one super spreader.
And they're saying that masks are required. Good luck on enforcing that. You know, somebody in the middle of a row, they're going to have him removed because he doesn't have his mask on? I mean,
well, how are you going to drink a beer and eat a hot dog next to the sweaty two people?
That's
next
what you're going to be doing.
This one is totally confusing for me. What I don't understand the let's go crazy, but then we're going to go back to being safe.
Right. How about let's be safe and then go crazy and
I don't understand. That make more sense? Weird.
I have to confess, I'm not sure what 100% would mean for the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, that still could be social distancing, right?
That's only 3,000 people.
That's a valid point.
I'm sorry, but Neil Liebman is a punchable face candidate for that kind of stupidity.
Can they get that many fans in the Home Depot? I don't know.
I submit three candidates to you.
All right. And we're going to put those up on Twitter. We'll have a poll on the Twitter feed.
I'm not going to make fun of your attendance, Pope. Don't worry. Got my own.
By the way, I think if I'm not mistaken, the girls basketball team that was subject of those slurs, I think they ended up winning the state tournament.
Perfect.
Right? And their opponents all joined them kneeling before every game thereafter.
Yeah. Good for them. Good for them. All right, that's your punchable face of the week. So we'll wait to hear what the vote is on the Twitter. All right, so let's turn from that ugliness that's sort of tied in with some of it that you'll see in a minute, but we're going to turn to our feel-good stories. These are our Ted Lasso moments of the week. And I'm going to start off with one, and I have to be very conscious here of getting a little misty-eyed as I do this because the cameras are rolling and it would be really a shame to give this away to Toby right now.
Our audience needs tears.
So this is the story of the legend of Big John Thompson and Patrick Ewing and the Georgetown Hoyas winning the Big East tournament. And you know, 49 years to the day that Georgetown hired Big John, the team
completes this really improbable run to go through the Big East tournament as an 8 seed. It's the second lowest seed to ever win the tournament. And they won it playing the kind of smothering defense that was a hallmark of John Thompson. And the reason that this is sort of a little more than just a sports story, I think, and I'm always conscious of this pod and diving too much into race and into politics. It's supposed to be fun, but you know, sports a lot of times does give us a preview of change coming. And it's oftentimes the battle lines of where some of these fights are most publicly fought. And, you know, when John Thompson took over coaching at Georgetown, he went there to build a program, and landing Patrick Ewing as a recruit really changed the Big East Conference. In fact, it was at that time that Dave Gavitt, who was the commissioner and one of the founders of the league, decided to put the tournament in Madison Square Garden, where it's been for 39 years consecutively now. But Patrick Ewing, he was the subject of some really horrible taunts and slurs himself, as we've been talking about. I was reading some old Washington Post articles on this kind of stuff. I mean, he had at one game, there was a sign under the basket that said Ewing can't read. He went to another Big East school and someone was reading a shirt that said the same thing. He also walked out on the court in one game and had people throw bananas at him. The abuse that Patrick Ewing took was so bad that there were multiple times where John Thompson said, "I'm pulling my team off the floor until you get your fans and your students under control here." And there were times where Thompson simply refused. He wasn't going to play. And John Thompson and Patrick Ewing really forged that bond. And along the same time while this is happening is really when the Big East is coming into its own. You know, and the Big East was built largely on the shoulders of some of these real just amazing character coaches that they had. You know, John Thompson was certainly one of them. He was the outspoken guy, the guy who walked off the court in protest of Prop 49, something that would have really was unfair to African-American athletes and SAT scores. But the other coaches, Jim Boeheim, of course, was a legend. He was there building the league. I mean, Raleigh Massimino was like the anti-John Thompson, of course, and just another huge character. And of course, Lou Carnesecca, who everybody loved at St. John's. And these guys, you know, they knew what they were doing.
You're missing someone.
Who am I missing?
Jim Calhoun.
Jim Calhoun. Yeah,
1B. But, you know, anyway. Wow. But these guys, you know, they knew what they were doing. They knew that they were building an entertaining league, and they had some unbelievable players come through there. And Thompson, it was just so important in the convergence of John Thompson and Patrick Ewing at the same time made Georgetown basketball what it was and made it really important for the country. Now, fast forward, everybody knows Ewing wins 3 Big East championships. He wins a national championship. John Thompson's the first Black coach to win a national championship. And Patrick Ewing goes on and has a legendary career in the NBA, all-star games, one of the top 50 players of all time. The only thing that he does miss is he doesn't win that NBA championship, and probably one of the greatest NBA players not to have a ring. But when he was done with his career, he didn't just sit back and finish playing basketball and go and, you know, he didn't need to work, right? He made enough money, but he wanted to coach. And unfortunately, you know, Pat Ewing, I'll say it, and I don't think he would, but, you know, he spent 15 years as an assistant coach in the NBA under some really great head coaches. And he never got that opportunity as a head coach. And he'll say, you know, well, there was a stigma against big men in the league being coaches. Well, I think we can also say there was a stigma against Black guys being coaches in the league too for a long time. Not the whole time. Certainly the NBA has more Black head coaches than a lot of sports. But Patrick Ewing never got a chance until, you know, Georgetown had John Thompson was really the significant coach there. He left. His longtime assistant, Craig Escherich, came in and didn't last very long. Then Thompson's son, JT3, comes in as the coach and takes the team to a Final Four, of course, largely on the backs of a lot of the recruits that Craig Escherich brought into the program. And when the Thompson, JT3 magic ran out, Big John convinced Patrick to take this job. And it was finally Patrick Ewing finally got a chance to be a head coach somewhere. In the D.C. area, Patrick was this guy who grew up in front of the fans. He was this just dominant player. He was so beloved. And to see him then go through a couple years at Georgetown, the transfers they had last year, it was a program in shambles. They had guys leaving in the middle of the year. They had guys leaving at the end of the year. Total shambles. So for him to go into Madison Square Garden and lead this team that was, picked to finish last, boy, when you saw the commissioner of the Big East, Val Ackerman, hand him the trophy, she understood what it meant for Big East basketball. For this guy, three championships as a player. Arguably, there's some great players that come through the Big East, but the timing of where the league was, probably the most important player to ever come through the league, at least for the success of that league.
Put him on the map.
What's that?
Put him on the map.
Yeah, that's right. And to come back and win it as a coach when he was overlooked for so long and not given a chance, and to do it in such a dominant fashion, that's just a great story. It's a great sports story, and it's to be celebrated. And so that's my Ted Lasso moment of the week.
It's a great story. It's a great story, and it's probably with a team. I doubt you're going to see any of those guys playing in the NBA. That's when you've got a great coach. When you take a team, and there will be players on the other teams in the Big East, including from Villanova and other teams, that will make the NBA. What Georgetown did was remarkable. It's a good, good story. Definitely cheers for Patrick Ewing on that one.
Yeah, when Patrick Ewing made that acceptance speech, I have to say I almost had a tear in my eye. I mean, he was my favorite NBA player on the as a Knicks fan. And if I could wave a magic wand and give one guy who never got it a championship ring, it would definitely be Ewing. And I couldn't be happier for him right now. I really couldn't.
So, Bison, do you think this is a turning point for the program? Do you think this run will result in the better recruiting that you would expect to see?
Well, yes. And to show you how liked Patrick Ewing is wherever he's been, you have guys making a point of coming out like I think Pat Riley was in the media saying, hey, if I'm a high school kid and I watch any of the basketball this weekend, I'd be going to Georgetown to play for Patrick Ewing after that run. People came out for him. Now he does have
Mutombo's son is already committed.
Yeah. There's some kid coming who's like a one and done. Who's on his way in anyway. And so they have a pretty good class coming. But yeah, I think this could be a launching pad. There's no reason for it not to be.
Brewster, why did you not have the security guards who asked Ewing for his credentials in Madison Square Garden as Punchable Face of the Week?
Because I already did Dolan, and he really is what's behind that.
Yeah.
Well, we're lucky this week.
That's
though.
Right.
We're lucky this week because that's not the only good story, right? We've got another Ted Lasso moment this week too.
So about 3 or 4 years ago, I was down in New Orleans and I was driving in a taxi cab, and New Orleans was in the middle of this reckoning that a lot of cities have been going through to take down some statues from the Jim Crow era. And there's a very famous statue that splits downtown, the French Quarter of New Orleans, from uptown, right in kind of Midtown Central Business District. Was a famous area that all the parades go through, that had a Jim Crow statue there, and they took it down. And I was driving in a cab, and I asked the taxi driver, like, what are they going to do now with this huge pedestal that goes way up in the air? What are they going to do with that? What are they thinking of putting there? And he said, you know what the folks really want to put on top of that pedestal? They really want to put a statue of Drew Brees. This guy, Drew Brees, is one of, forget about beloved athletes. What he did for that community, and you talk about this amazing story of the redemption of a great basketball program in Georgetown, the redemption of an entire city in New Orleans that was put on the back of a quarterback, Drew Brees. In August of 2005, one of our nation's greatest cities was decimated by one of the worst natural disasters we've ever had in this country. Katrina completely destroyed that city, and a lot of people thought that it was done for good. But they renewed it and they rebuilt it. And the sports that we talk about, you know, sports are a part of a civic community. And in 2006, the Saints signed a pretty good quarterback who came out of Purdue, played for the Chargers, brought the Chargers to the first time in their playoffs in 2004. They hadn't been in the playoffs in 10 years. And the Saints signed him, and there was a little bit of controversy because he had come off a very bad torn labrum injury. And the famous surgeon, James Andrews, said that it was the most remarkable recovery he's ever seen in an athlete. Drew Brees came to New Orleans, and the city got behind him, and the Saints all of a sudden had a rebirth that matched the city. Remember, 2005, the Superdome was a place that turned into a refuge, that turned into a place where, unfortunately, there were deaths, there were murders, there were crimes as people were trying to huddle during Katrina. The roof was blown off of what was supposed to be the greatest stadium ever built since the Astrodome. There's a great, great podcast, just a shout out to one of our brethren in the podcast world, ESPN 30 for 30. Their season 6, episode 4, Cursed and Blessed podcast is a great, great podcast. You should listen to that. It's the story of the Superdome. But Drew Brees came in and he put the team and he put the city on his back. And let me tell you, I don't think Devery Henderson, Marcus Colston, Lance Moore, they're good receivers. I don't think they're going to the Hall of Fame. But they had an incredible, incredible quarterback who put together 15 years with the team, 20 years altogether. And it will be broken, of course, by Tom Brady. But right now, he is the leading passer in NFL history. He ended up winning the Saints' first and only Super Bowl in 2009, was the Super Bowl MVP, beating another quarterback we've all heard of named Peyton Manning. He's the only Super Bowl with five multiple 5,000-yard seasons. He holds the record for passing yardage in one season with the just astonishing 5,476 yards. He has the most 300-plus passing yards games in NFL history with 123. In the highest completion percentage in a single season, he has four out of the top five, including number one, passing 74.4% in 2018. And here's what I thought was a really interesting stat about Drew Brees. So in the same time frame he was in with other Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Big Ben, and Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, the 2001 to 2019 Patriots, had the number one scoring defense. They let up the fewest points. Big Ben had the number two scoring defense from 2004 to 2020, and Aaron Rodgers had the number six scoring defense with the Packers from 2008 to 2020. From 2006 to 2020, Drew Brees and the Saints had the 23rd scoring defense. He won despite a porous defense on that team. He's a fantastic guy with incredible contributions to his community. And I really think that in terms of the good guys and the guys who took you know, he only got recruited by two schools coming out of high school, despite, you know, bringing the first ever championship to his then team in Texas, first high school championship. He then went to Purdue and brought them to their first Rose Bowl. His Longhorns didn't want him.
He's a hometown boy in Austin.
A great story, a great career. I'm privileged that all of us as sports fans watched his career. He announced his retirement this weekend, and I just think his story and what he did for that city is really a great sports story, a great sports relationship, and my Ted Lasso of the week.
Let me pile on because, you know, New Orleans is my birthplace, so I have a special affinity to the city.
What?
So Drew's foundation's given over $35 million to the New Orleans and Gulf Coast community. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And the Raging Cajun, James Carville, has said the following: no one has ever scored higher as far as their combination of athletic achievement and involvement in a community. In more ways than one, he's arguably the most significant New Orlean of the 21st century. Pretty strong words and very well-deserved, Ted Lasso.
To put his passing yards record that you mentioned into perspective, there have been 12 times when a quarterback passed for 5,000 yards in a season, and Drew was 5 of those 12 times. That's amazing.
I might get this wrong, but my recollection is that when he signed his contract with New Orleans originally, because remember, he had that injury. Toby, you mentioned it. It was unclear what he was going to be like coming back. New Orleans was coming back from Katrina, and he took out a full-page ad right in the paper. And said, you know, thanks to the city for giving him a chance, and they were going to rebuild together, or something along those lines. But there was just a love affair between Drew Brees and New Orleans from the minute he got there.
Yeah, and those fans were wearing bags over their head not long before then.
The Aints. They were the Aints.
Toby, you forgot one important stat. Do you know which team he beat more than anyone?
Is it the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Yes, it is. It is. So as a
you must
Bucks
be glad
fan,
for his retirement
because that guy absolutely owned us. Like I just every week before we played New Orleans, I mean, it was just like, yeah, we're gonna lose. I mean, it was just. I mean, he dominated the Bucks in every way. And you're right. He was done in by. You know, you can sit there and say, well, he only won one Super Bowl. He was done in by. Porous, bad defense for most of his career until the last couple of years. They got a lot better, but I mean, he had some really bad defenses with him, which prevented him from getting more world championships.
Well, and you hate to, I mean, look, I never like to talk about officiating or, you know, referees, but really they suffered, I think, two of the most, egregious calls that kept them from at least advancing in the playoffs.
Great point.
You know,
that great point.
Very good teams. I mean, so yeah, he had one. It just shows you how hard it is to get to and win a Super Bowl because, you know, but for two calls, he had some great teams that had a chance to advance.
That Vikings game. Ugh.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Led to a rule change.
Well, you know, of course, but for Brett Favre's untimely interception in the 2009 NFC Championship game, they wouldn't have made the Super Bowl.
True.
That's true, too.
That's right. So those are some good ones. So that's
they would have totally beat the Eagles that year, too.
Easy does it.
Yeah, that's true.
Easy does it.
Shambles.
All right. Well, those are our Ted Lasso moments. Guys, speed round. Any last parting thoughts in sports? It was a big week in sports. There's got to be a couple things someone wants to throw out.
Well, just an FYI for you guys, Man City needs to win 4 of its next 7 games to win the Premier League.
Don't choke on it.
I wanted to salute the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're part of the original 6 in the NHL in 1917. Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Montreal, the Rangers, and Toronto. And before the 1939 season, Toronto had won 12 Stanley Cups. They didn't win another one until the 1999-2000 season, and that was it. They've been on a dry spell ever since. Well, right now they're number one in the North with a 28-19 record, which is actually number one in the league. I think it would be cool to see them finally come back and win it this year. I won't be rooting for them against my team, but if they win it all, it'd be nice. And so I salute.
It would have been nice. It would have been nice until you just put the jinx on them by you know.
So Toronto's done
right there. Paul Miller, you can blame Mike Phelan when it all goes south from this point forward.
Paul Miller, just be happy that someone mentioned one of your teams.
Listen, I'm moving on to Winnipeg now.
two quick hitters. Thank God Joel Embiid only has a bone bruise. That was a scary moment for the NBA, scary moment for us Sixers fans. Let's hope he's back well. Great story in Indiana. A lot of people, an afterthought from the huge Harden trade, very talented player coming out of Brooklyn named Caris LeVert, really up and comer, traded a couple times, threw to Houston, made his way back to Indiana, gets to Indiana, and they find out that he's got cancer of the kidney. And I mean, I think most people said he's certainly done for the season and will he ever have a career again? They removed the cancer. He was out for several weeks. And the other night, he started a game, scored about, you know, 13, 14 points, and looked pretty much himself. It's a remarkable, remarkable story. And again, we don't talk a lot about the Indiana Pacers, but I hope one day later in the season, he has a remarkable game and Caris LeVert can be our Ted Lasso of the week. That's a good story this week.
Good story. Good story.
Real quick, and with apologies to the majors, my favorite weekend to watch golf is the Players Championship with the island hole at 17 and the other two holes are great three finishing holes. Good drama yesterday. You would think it would be DeChambeau and Westwood back-to-back pairings in the final round. First time that's happened in many, many years. But on number four, I don't know if anybody of y'all saw this, but Bryson DeChambeau hit a topper drive into the pond, looking probably like the five of us would look if we went out.
That was awesome.
Definitely looked like Rooster. Balls. Definitely looked like
and
Rooster,
then,
yeah.
And then Westwood stepped up and hit a ball, a slice way out into the lumber yard. Those guys, neither one of them
was shot. Yeah.
After into the gorse, like milk. No.
After that, yeah, after like the milk. Fourth.
No, like house.
Neither one was able to come back, and JT came through big, and I think the majors are going to be shaping up as a big shootout. Justin Thomas is looking like he's coming into form.
Roll Tide, right?
There yeah, you go. Baby. Roll
Tide, big day
hey,
yesterday.
By the way, hey, Westwood so far is the story of the year in golf.
Dad Clearly. Bod.
Yeah.
Dad bod.
I mean, he's playing ridiculous golf right now.
Hey, Bison, your Wizards have the scoring leader and the assist leader in the league right now. Did you know that?
Yeah, and they're like 9 games under 500, too. It's amazing.
They're coming back. They're
still make the playoffs.
You know what? I was happy to see Joel Embiid's injury was not more serious also, because we would have been down to 4 SMQBs on this podcast for like a month. Because, House, we know you would have gone into a dark, dark place.
Send the fruit bouquet.
We've seen it before. It's not pretty.
Plus, I don't want to hear any excuses when the Knicks knocked them out of the playoffs.
Oh,
good Lord. So next weekend, let's on our next show, let's find out how many things we were actually wrong about on this brackets. I can't wait.
Probably most of them.
Hey, next week, live from Nantucket, right?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Live show.
All right, guys.
We're going to be together for the first time in a long time. It'll be awesome.
See you all soon.
See you soon.
Good show, everyone.
See you soon, man. Bye, guys.